While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and it is great to have you with me as we dive into the stories shaping our country and the wider world. Now, I'll be bringing you analysis, updates, and perspectives for the next hour and a half. This is your trusted source for the latest news and updates in Namibia and beyond, bringing you breaking developments, in-depth analysis, and the conversations that matter most. Every day, decisions are being made that affect how we live, how we work, how we invest, and how we grow as a nation. From governance and economic shift to innovation, youth development, and private sector expansion, we are here to unpack what's happening and why it matters. Now, through our live broadcasts and digital platforms, On the Radar keeps you connected to real-time updates in politics, in business, in technology, health, education, and culture. So wherever you're listening from, Windhoek, Walvis Bay, Oshakati, Ongwediva, Mariental, Grootfontein, or Swakopmund, or anywhere else across Namibia, welcome to the conversation. This right here is On the Radar News Analysis, where information meets insight and where Namibia stays informed. Now, we're starting off with very exciting news for you right now. So let's get in touch with Crystal Nassau, Director of Corporate Engagement and International Relations at the University, at the Vavija University.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now joining us in studio telephonically is Ms. Crystal Nassau, and she's the Director of Corporate Engagement and International Relations at the Vilvicha University. Now, very good afternoon to you, Ms. Crystal, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis yet again.
A good afternoon to you, Ms. Happy, and to all the listeners.
I know that you have very interesting, exciting news for us from Vilvicha University. So tell us exactly what NQA approved for Vilvicha.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Happy and the Eagle FM, for this wonderful opportunity to share amazing news with prospective students and also stakeholders. So on Friday, Vilvicha University received the expansion of scope in 5 distinct qualifications by the Namibia Qualifications Authority, NQA.
Mm.
So basically, in layman's terms, we received full accreditation for 5 different subjects, mainly under our Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education, and then also one program under our Faculty of Health Sciences. And the programs that were accredited are the Bachelor's of Education in Secondary Education Honors, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honors, Bachelor of Social Work Honors, Bachelor of Law Honors, and as well as the Diploma in Legal Studies, which is accredited at NQF Level 6.
Isn't that massive and very interesting news right there, Ms. Crystal? Now, of course, walk us through your accreditation process. How did it actually come about?
Well, Ms. Happy, this is actually a very important question also to the public out there who do not understand how institutional accreditation of programs work. So basically, an institution will submit a detailed application of its programs, and then the NQA, which is the regulator of programs, will then conduct site visits and evaluations and also address council feedback and so forth. And then thereafter, they will then issue accreditation of these programs. Now, what is also important for our listeners to understand is that during the accreditation process, we do receive provisional accreditation, which allows the university to actually open its doors for applicants of these programs mm-hmm. with conditional accreditation. So during that time, the NQA want to see how the curriculum is responding to students. So in the midst that we don't have, like, you know, that our education program has been running for a while right now. Mm-hmm. However, it was not fully accredited, but that is part of the full NQA accreditation process so that the regulators can observe how the curriculum responds to students. And thereafter is when now they do a final site visit and then issue the full accreditation of the programs as what was said.
Mm. Now, what does this mean for students, especially for upcoming intakes?
Well, I'm glad that you asked, Ms. Happy, because this is excellent. So our prospective students can now actually apply for our June 2026 intake in these programs. And our June intake will officially open on the 1st of April. However, I would want to emphasize also that for the following programs, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honors, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honors, Bachelor of Law Honors, and the Diploma in Legal Studies. Those four programs are now officially open still for the January intake for admissions. And that admissions will close on the 31st of March. So if you are out there and you still want to apply for Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honors, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honors, Bachelor of Law or Diploma Studies, way to our site, which is www.wu.edu.na until the 31st of March. In addition, Ms. Happy, and also to our listeners out there, mm-hmm. some good news is that the NASFA funding for subsidized education is still open until the 31st of March. So, number one, our students that applied for these respective programs mm-hmm. for the January intake last month, they still have the opportunity to still, now that these programs are accredited, so that they can too qualify for subsidized education. Equally so, those students that are applying now for the new extended deadlines for these mentioned four programs, excluding social work, can also still apply for the NASFA subsidized, Ministry of Education subsidized education, free education.
Mm. Isn't that wonderful that there's still opportunity or ample time for them to actually still apply for subsidized education funding? Now,
yes.
How will you ensure, or how will the university ensure program quality going forward?
Well, Ms. Happy, we are currently tackling all our NQA conditions promptly, and we are also preparing for reaccreditation under Regulation 12.1. And so our blended models also combine flexibility with rigorous standards supporting Namibia's education goals.
Oh, that's quite interesting, Ms. Nassau. Now, of course, why expand now, and what's next for Velvicia University?
Well, for us, The accreditation really responds to our stakeholders' demand for advanced qualifications. And what we have also seen is that our stakeholders are now demanding us to actually roll out these accredited programs, especially those that are under the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, to all our campuses. And also we have received the feedback from our stakeholders that they would want the option of distance studies. So currently, most of our programs are offered on blended mode. However, we are now looking into the future and providing these type of options to our stakeholders. And also what stakeholders can expect next is our June intake. I will re-emphasize it, which will open on the 1st of April 2026 and it will close on the 31st of May 2026. We will also now be looking at offering different types of programs and also seeking accreditation for these type of programs, programs in ICT, for instance, in communications and marketing, in HR, business. Those type of programs is what the public can expect from Velvicha going forward.
Now, Ms. Nassau, any message for stakeholders or perhaps for the applicants themselves?
Well, firstly, to our partners, we want to say thank you for the support, NQA, NCHE, for always guiding our regulations and for the promptness in helping us to comply to regulations. Then also to our stakeholders, our students, for instance, I would want to say seize the opportunity and apply for the June intake and also secure funding by the 31st of March 2026 from the NASFAF. Also, in addition, the four programs that I just mentioned now, the Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Law Honours, and also the Diploma in Legal Studies are now open on extended application admissions until the 31st of March 2026. So students who want to apply and who are eligible to apply, I want you to seize this opportunity and apply before the 31st of March. Also, Velvicha is your pathway to excellence where everyone is an achiever. If you have any questions, you can actually send them to our admissions at wu.edu.na, or you can actually apply online at www.wu.edu.na.
Wonderful. Ms. Crystal Nassau, thank you so much for giving us that interesting and, of course, massive good news from Velvicha University.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Happy Eagle FM, and also to our listeners that were listening promptly. Please make your way to the website. Get your documents in order. I did forget to say that we have an application fee of $230 Namibian. However, if you do qualify for subsidized education according to the funding requirements, you do not pay any tuition fee or no, not tuition fee, but registration fee when you do register with us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And of course, there you had it from Crystal Nassau, and she is the Director for Corporate Engagement and International Relations at the Velvicha University. As Velvicha University just secured NQA approval for new programs. Now, of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On The Reader News Analysis. We're back with more. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngendo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ngetashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, vera hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now in other news, Namibia joined the global community in commemorating World Wetlands Day and World Water Day, events that highlight the critical role of wetlands and freshwater resources in sustaining ecosystems, livelihoods, and economic development. Now in the country, the two observance are often linked through national awareness activities that emphasize the importance of conserving wetlands and promoting sustainable water management in one of the driest nations in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, the commemorations also drew attention to the need for stronger protection of water resources or water sources in the face of increasing climate variability and growing demand for water resources. Now, Namibia's participation in this global observance is closely tied to its commitments under the Ramsar Convention on Wetlands, an international agreement dedicated to the conservation, and sustainable use of wetlands. Now, the country has designated several wetlands of international importance, including Vavis Bay, Lagon, Sandwich Harbor, Etosha Pen, Orange River mouth, and Lower Okavango River. Now, these wetlands play an essential role in supporting biodiversity, sustaining fisheries, providing grazing areas, and serving as habitats for migratory birds and wildlife. Now, as one of the most arid countries in Africa, Namibia relies heavily on limited and often variable water resources. Many communities depend on groundwater and shared transboundary rivers for domestic use, agriculture, and livestock farming. Wetlands therefore serve as a vital natural system that help regulate water flows, recharge groundwater, filter pollutants, and mitigate flooding. They also support rural livelihoods, particularly in northern regions where seasonal wetland systems provide water, food resources, and grazing for communities. Now, the national commemoration typically brings together government institutions, development partners, researchers, and local communities in order to raise awareness about the importance of water observation and ecosystem protection. Activities often include educational campaigns, community outreach programs, school engagement initiatives, and discussions on sustainable water management and climate resilience. Now, through this efforts, Namibia continues to promote the protection of wetlands and responsible water use as key pillars for environmental sustainability and long-term water security. And of course, Namibia commemorated by also educating young people, especially school-going children. Let's now listen to a speaker at a particular event today.
I'm also going to make an emphasis around youth inclusion, looking at the profile of our representatives here present. So it is also an honor, but also a responsibility, colleagues, that today we join and come together as we commemorate World Wetlands Day and World Water Day. Two moments on the global calendar. So I'm not saying it's only a national calendar. Two important events in the global calendar that remind us of a simple but profound truth, that water sustains life. Can I have an echo around water sustains life? I'm talking to the young ones. Water sustains? Water sustains? Water sustains lives. Thank you. But water also sustains livelihoods, ecosystems, and economies. Do you know that without water, we will not be here present? Some people say we need air to breathe. What of water? Can you go for a day without it? Maybe two? 1 week? Okay, I think we are getting the impression. And when I say our economies depend on it, what comes to mind? I'm still talking to the youthful group. When we say it also sustains our economies, what do we mean by that? Can someone be courageous? Whatever comes to mind, we're saying water also sustains our economies. What does that mean? Yes, yes, ma'am. Please stand up, introduce yourself, and just give your response. The nice thing is, this is a conversation. There is no right or wrong answer. Yes. Very much dependent on water. We all have got farms where we go back and see our grandparents doing some farming work and adding water to ensure that the plants grow, isn't it? But we also look at our industries. It's a catalytic input for our industries to function. Without water, all these industries, think of any industry that you might think of, will disappear. But if you think of water in terms of health as well, if we don't have water, we end up with diarrheal diseases, you end up missing school. So there are so many developmental aspects around it. So when we're talking of preserving it, it is in that context that water sustains life. For Namibia, one of the driest countries in sub-Saharan Africa, were you aware that Namibia is one of the driest countries in sub-Saharan Africa? Water is not merely a resource. If someone is living where there is abundance, maybe their perception of water will be different, isn't it? But for us, it goes beyond that. It is a strategic national asset. It's a development enabler, and it's a foundation for resilience, for resilient livelihoods. So today, I wish to speak about an aspect of water governance that is increasingly recognized globally, but still not adequately embedded in practice: the strategic integration of gender equality, youth inclusion, disability inclusion, and indigenous knowledge in water management. This cannot be another ordinary story, colleagues. When we walk out of this place, it's not another ordinary conversation. It must be a story about power, about systems, about investment choices. I'm also looking around the table where our highest officials are sitting, and the kind of future we are building. It is about unlocking transformative leverage in terms of how we govern water. Namibia does not act in isolation. We are part of a global and continental movement to transform water governance. Through the recently launched Africa Water Vision and Policy, I'm sure we are all aware. Can we raise hands for those that know that Africa has got a new water vision and policy? Thank you. So walk away remembering this. We have got a new vision and policy that is supposed to inspire action until 2063. In this, it distinctly speaks of the importance, guess of what, of women, men, boys and girls in terms of sustainably managing and utilizing these water resources, but also the importance of that in terms of driving and strengthening livelihoods. So we have a vision that is echoing our theme. So whoever came up with the theme, congratulations. You are acknowledging what's happening around the globe as well as continentally. At continental level, like I said, the Africa Water Vision 2063 calls for a water secure and climate resilient Africa in which water supports prosperity, dignity, ecological integrity, and inclusive development. This framing, ladies and gentlemen, is important. Africa, and should I say Namibia, will not secure its water future by engineering solutions alone. No disrespect to my peer engineers in the room. But it's not the only solution. It must also strengthen governance, inclusion, knowledge systems, including our indigenous knowledge systems, and accountability. And then, if we look at our sustainable development goals, there is one sustainable development goal, number 6. Anyone who remembers what SDG number 6 is all about? Yes? Thank you. Well, let's give a yes? Sustainable development goal number 5 is on what? Anyone remembers number 5? Yes? Well, let's give a hand. It's on gender equality and the wider agenda of leaving no one behind. And this is something that's also embedded in our Rwanda Prosperity Plan, that we are not going to leave no one behind. And as a sector, we are also not going to leave no one behind when it comes to the planning and management of water and vital ecosystems such as wetlands. And if we are also going to look at the Ramsar Convention on Wetlands, the Convention on Biological Diversity, and the Paris Agreement, all of these reinforce the need to protect ecosystems while strengthening climate resilience and social inclusion. This means gender mainstreaming is not an optional social add-on. We have a responsibility. Youth inclusion is not a by-the-way thing that we do. We are framing our development pathway with you at the center because we are the future. Indigenous knowledge is not a footnote. These are strategic levers for better water outcomes. And a moment of leadership from Namibia. Who knows who is our global water partnership ambassador for gender equality? Who is the Global Water Partnership Ambassador for Gender Equality? This one would need special recognition, whoever remembers this one. Anyone? Anyone? The excellence, speak up, Selma, it is true. You know, Namibia carries a special responsibility in this conversation. In October 2025, the Global Water Partnership appointed the Excellency President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa as its global champion for gender equality, a role dedicated to advancing gender transformative water investments worldwide. Can we give a round of applause because of the responsibility to carry? That pronouncement matters because it places Namibia at the center of a global call to move from rhetoric to investment, from visibility to influence, and from representation to measurable change. Our president has not been apologetic about the transformative power of women's leadership, inclusive governance, and development that reaches those who are often left at the margins. That leadership challenge now extends to all of us in this room today. So why is this conversation important, if I may ask? Why gender mainstreaming? Why conversation around indigenous, preserving indigenous knowledge systems? Why this conversation around youth empowerment or disability mainstreaming? When water systems fail, the burdens are not experienced equally. Women and girls often carry the time burden of water collection, the care burden when sanitation fails, and the hidden stress of managing scarcity at household level. And for the voucher, probably.
Now, World Wetlands D and World Water D are crucial ecosystems, are important for Namibia, as wetlands are crucial ecosystems that support diversity or biodiversity, filter water, and mitigate climate change. Water, on the other hand, is life, of course, and these days highlight the need for sustainable management and conservation of this precious resource. Now, Namibia's wetlands like the Okavango Delta and Etoshapane are vital for wildlife, for tourism, and local communities. Water scarcity is a big issue in Namibia, and conserving and managing water resources is a key to the country's development and ecosystem health. Now, educating learners and students is also quite vital, as teaching about wetlands and water conservation helps learners and students understand Namibia's unique ecosystems and the importance of sustainability. Also, it helps learners to make better informed decisions as to what they're perhaps passionate about and what they would want to pursue in terms of career-wise. So hence, it's quite necessary to educate them while still young, and to also bringing them on board and incorporate them on when we such celebrations are taking place, so that they can learn beyond just classroom levels, level or theoretical levels, but also practical levels, as they see those who are in the field actually speaking and educating them about the importance of wetlands. Now, it encourages also responsible water use, conservation efforts, and appreciation for Namibia's natural heritage. Another particular point that I would want to make here is that when we educate the students or the learners, they tend to be the ones to educate their communities, or even parents at home. They see, when they see the importance of something, they themselves tend to appreciate. And also when they see the risk that the future, the risks that the next generation will have in terms of when we don't take care of our ecosystem, when we don't take care of our wetlands, they then try to, when they understand it thoroughly, they themselves play their part in actually preserving ecosystems, and therefore helping the next generation. Now, it does encourage a responsible water use. It encourages them to responsibly use water, and therefore also plays their part in conservation efforts. Now, practical activities like cleanup campaigns, wetland visits, or water saving projects can also make learning fun and impactful. Now, Namibia has also participated in the global observance in commitments under the Ramsar Convention on Wetlands. Now, the Ramsar Convention is an international treaty that is focused on conserving and managing wetlands globally. Namibia is part of it, with several sites designated as wetlands of international importance, and such as the Walvis Bay Wetlands and the Etoshapane. Now, Namibia's role in the Ramsar Convention is conservation itself, that is to protect and manage Ramsar sites, like preventing pollution and habitat destruction, also sustainable use by encouraging ecotourism and wise use of wetlands for local communities. Also awareness, such as the example I just made now with the students, by educating people, not just the learners themselves, but the communities themselves, educating people about wetland importance. Then they play their part in raising awareness to it. Now, what Namibia can do to play its part is to strengthen protection, that is by enhancing management and monitoring of Ramsar sites, community engagement by involving local communities in wetland conservation and benefits, as well as capacity building, that is by training more people in wetland management and conservation techniques. Also, on research and data, Namibia can also play its part in research and use data to inform wetland conservation decisions that are well made by people who understand in depth the environment, the ecosystem, the wetlands, what is beneficial for the community, what could enhance perhaps those benefits and all that. Yeah. But for now, let's take a listen to Governor of Commerce Region, that is Sam Shafishuna, as he was part of the celebration. And let's listen to how he addressed the people and address us now.
It is my utmost honor to address you all at the joint commemoration of World Wetlands Day and World Water Day 2026. These two international observances are designated by the United Nations, are celebrated annually on 2nd February and 22nd of March, respectively. Today, we are again brought together as Namibia to appreciate and recognize the importance of these natural resources to our environment, our people, and our nation. Wetlands and water symbolizes the foundational pillars of our existence. They are the lifelines that sustain our biodiversity, support our livelihoods, and preserve our cultural heritage. Wetlands and water are indispensable to our economy, yet they are finite and vulnerable. Today we are gathered here not only to celebrate these life-giving resources, but also to call for actions to raise awareness, to value these resources, and to promote their sustainable use. Ladies and gentlemen, Namibia, though classified as the driest sub-Saharan country, is blessed with diverse wetlands, marshes, rivers, lakes, floodplains, oceans, lagoons, and even human-made wetlands such as dams and salt pans. These ecosystems are our ecological treasures, underpinning both cultural heritage and ancestral sanctuaries. Half of our population live in rural areas, deriving their livelihoods from the wetland resources. Internationally, World Wetlands Day 2026 is celebrated under the theme Wetlands and Traditional Knowledge, celebrating cultural heritage. This theme reminds us that wetlands are not mere ecological systems, but their cultural heritage significance for generations. Indigenous communities in Namibia have relied on wetlands for sustenance and traditions practices. Wetlands are residents of ancestral spirits. As a drought-prone nation, we rely on traditional indicators. We observe bird migrations, wind direction, and the flowering of certain trees to predict the arrival of absence of rain. Relying on this invisible science called indigenous knowledge, our forefathers celebrated the arrival of floods, and our people continue to do so in modern days. Our water pans and springs, like those found in the Kunene or the south, are used for spiritual cleansing. In celebrating this theme, Namibia affirms her commitment towards preserving these indigenous values and ecological wisdom. Our traditional water stewardship approaches, wetland preservation, and cultural practices should not be remnants of history, but knowledge systems that continue to shape pathways towards sustainable development for centuries. Our traditional authorities have been bestowed with the responsibility as custodians of land. The 2026 theme validates their role in regulating seasonal fishing, protecting water holes, and managing communal grazing in floodplains and oceans.
Let's make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Whew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no! Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
It is my utmost honor to address you all at the joint commemoration of World Wetlands and Access to Water and Sanitation. We are hoping that housekeeping responsibilities are not neglected. Therefore, this year's theme compels us to reflect on how water security deepens gender inequality. Equitable access to water is not just about survival, it is about empowerment. When women, girls, and less privileged members of our society have reliable access to safe water, they gain time, dignity, and opportunity. Addressing water scarcity is therefore a stepping stone to gender equality and social inclusivity. Access to clean water is a prerequisite visit for menstrual hygiene management and maternal health. In a country striving to reduce maternal mortality, the link between water and gender is a matter of life and dignity. Water and sanitation represent the two pillars of human existence, the preservation of life and the restoration of dignity. By decisively addressing water scarcity and gender disparities in access to water and sanitation, we are upholding fundamental rights and ensuring that the promise of dignity is extended to every Namibian, regardless of their gender, regardless whether they are men or women. My esteemed audience, as part of Namibia's vision for water security and sustainable development goal number 6, Namibia is committed to improving access to safe drinking water and sanitation for all citizens. Achieving this will contribute to improved health, quality of life, and economic growth. To this end, the country has made strides towards ensuring access to potable water. At national level, 91.4% of households have access to safe potable water, up from 80% in the 2011 national census. This figure is broken down as follows. In urban areas, 98% of households have yard water connection. Rural areas, 87.5% of households have access to potable water. But some of our rural communities continue to walk long distances to water points. While 90% of peri-urban and informal settlements have access to safe drinking water, mostly through communal standpipes. While access to water is a success, sanitation remains a national crisis, with Namibia having some of the lowest levels of sanitation coverage in Southern Africa. Approximately 40% of Namibian households still do not have access to basic toilet facilities, often practicing open defecation, which is recognized as a major public health and dignity issue. These startling figures call for concerted efforts, investment, and technical capacity to redress these social inequalities and national sanitation crisis. Over the past 10 years, progressive efforts have been made to close the widening gap in water investments, resulting in a number of programs being implemented to lessen the burden on our community and improve water security. The Namibia Water Sector Support Program is one of the interventions purposefully implemented by the government to expand both bulk and rural water supply and sanitation provision at schools and health facilities. Though government remains fully committed to address these challenges, ensuring 100% coverage requires more than government interventions. Infrastructure development alone is not sufficient. We require a transformative, rights-based approach that ensures gender equality in both access and decision-making. Women already manage water at household level. They must equally participate in water point communities, basin management committees, regional planning forums, and national policy processes. Government is therefore strengthening gender mainstreaming across the water sector by promoting equitable representation, supporting capacity building initiatives for rural women, encouraging women's participation in technical water professions, and integrating gender responsive budgeting into infrastructure planning. To conclude, ladies and gentlemen, sustains our ecosystem, water sustains our people. Gender equality sustains our democracy. Let this commemoration serve as a renewed national commitment to protect our wetlands, secure our water future, empower women and youth in water leadership, and advance sustainable development for all Namibians. Where water flows, quality grows. I thank you.
Where water flows, quality grows. Now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is On The Radar News Analysis. We're opening the studio line as well. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Should you be interested in sharing your opinion or contribution on the news that we cover today, please come through and air your opinions on 083-288-401. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angetashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa vera etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be. Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now for some economic indicators before we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. US dollar today is equals to 16.29 Namibian dollars, and one Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 67 cents, while one United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 44 cents, £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 87 cents, 1 yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 37 cents, 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. And with that, let's now switch over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. As always, we always start off in regional news, move over to continental news, thereafter bring you some international news. And of course, let's start off in South Africa, as SANDF has deployed to Rivalier in Johannesburg.
News just in as we take you live. Soldiers have arrived in Rivoli in Johannesburg this morning after President Cyril Ramaphosa announced during his State of the Nation address last month that the military will be deployed in areas riddled by gang violence and illegal mining activities to support the police. The SAPS has been struggling to enforce the rule of law in these hotspots across the country. For now, the SANDF deployment is a temporary mission expected to end on the 31st of March next year. Let's get some insight from our reporter on the ground, Lopang Alamu, who's in Rivoli. A very good afternoon to you, Lopang. I mean, we are seeing on our screen members of the SANDF just filling the streets there. Talk to us about what's happening on the ground.
We're still currently in Rivoli. Now, this is where I think just over 100 soldiers deployed by the SANDF to basically just oversee what is currently happening in areas one might describe as hotspot areas. We understand that these soldiers left Eldorado Park not too long ago, and they then just came to look at and try and manage the situation in Reveille. Now, you'd notice that they're also currently packing up and making their way to the next area. You'd also notice that I'm quite out of breath. Now, this is because they've covered quite a distance, and this is on foot. Now, we've had to just follow them, run after them as they make that patrol. We spoke to some residents who say that they're quite happy to see such a huge presence of the defense force in their communities. We saw them going in and out of homes. Those flats where quite a number of people have been arrested for serious cases such as murder, sexual abuse cases, as well as armed robbery. Now, the people in this area are saying they're quite delighted. We'll actually try and speak to some who have been out of their homes and looking at what is currently happening. I'm sure you're quite satisfied to see quite a huge number of soldiers are in your neighborhood and just really trying to ensure your safety and the safety of the residents as well in the area.
Yes, I'm very happy because we've been crying for the army to come out because of the gangsterism and the zamazamas in our area. So we're happy today that the army is around. And then I still spoke to one of them and he said, no, they're going to be here until next year. So we're happy about that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. The sentiments shared by the residents here. Another being the fact that the president did mention in the State of the Nation address that such a deployment will be taking place. As things stand, we've seen them in about three areas since this morning. And we are not too certain yet which part of Johannesburg they'll be moving to. But we do understand that it is another area where crime is a cause for concern for the residents and for the people of Gauteng at large. We do understand that this is going to happen across the country. We spoke to residents in Eldorado Park earlier who mentioned that this is the first time they've seen the army present in their neighborhoods, and perhaps just hoping that such patrols continue happening, and this would then make it seem a bit safer for these communities. I think we'd leave it here for now as we try our best to follow them to their next location.
Of the SANDF and the kind of reception, how community members are receiving them. We'll also recall that at the weekend, Acting Police Minister Feroz Kachalia had been questioned while he was in Westbury, another crime-riddled area, about when the deployment would take place. And he'd spoken quite a great deal about how training was needed before the army can be sent out to the streets. Is there a correlation? I mean, have they been officially deployed or are we just seeing their presence at the moment?
Well, one, I can actually not make that determination at the moment.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
News just deal about how training was needed before the army can be sent out to the streets. Is there a correlation? I mean, have they been officially deployed or are we just seeing their presence at the moment?
Well, one, I can actually not make that determination at the moment. However, this does seem as the start of that deployment plan that was mentioned by the president during the State of the Nation address. And this is what residents have been waiting for. The ones we spoke to earlier saying that they didn't really think that this would happen. Some also saying that they feel quite uncomfortable, that seeing soldiers is very different from seeing your usual law enforcement agencies, your Metro Police officers, your South African Police Services officers. Now, they also mentioned that that slight discomfort in their presence is actually good for the community, knowing that there are people who are here to ensure that these cases of gangsterism, now Rivoli, the shooting that happened last week, you've got hotspot areas such as Eldorado Park as well, where gangsterism is quite a huge problem. Now they're here to try and ensure that those groups, those gangs, aren't left with anything more to do, and just basically to enforce the rule of law. South African Police Service, the Metro Police officers, and your local law enforcement agencies have been inundated with the number of gangsterism cases, the number of murder cases, the amount of shootings. That's also quite a cause for concern. We've seen quite a number of these random mass shootings that have been taking place in and around the country. Why?
News on soldiers that have been deployed to Revelia in Johannesburg, and this comes after President Cyril Ramaphosa announced during his State of the Nation address last month that the military will be deployed in areas riddled by gang violence and illegal mining activities. That is in order to help support the police. Now, South Africa's police has been struggling to enforce the rule of law in those particular hotspots across the country. But at this point, the South African NDF has been deployed on a temporary mission expected to end on the 31st of March next year, and is aimed at stabilizing affected communities. Still on South Africa, South Africa's economic growth in 2025 is said to have fallen short of its expectations.
Managed to register growth of 1.1% for 2025 after growing by 0.4% in the last 3 months of the year. But while Statistician General Risenga Maluleke says it may be something to write home about, the country needs more growth.
Growth during the quarter was mainly driven by the finance, real estate and business services sector, which increased by 1.4%. Other sectors supporting growth included trade, catering and accommodation, personal and government services. Agriculture also showed strong activity, particularly in field crops.
When we see ultimately a growth of 1.1% in the year 2025, it's not sufficient enough. It's something to write home about and celebrate. But it's not sufficient enough to address other issues that we're looking there out there in the economy, particularly the issue of job markets.
However, 5 of the 10 industries in the economy contracted during the quarter. Manufacturing declined by 0.6%, with 8 out of the 10 divisions recording negative growth. In the mining sector, coal and platinum group metals were amongst the biggest negative contributors. Meanwhile, gross fixed capital formation, which measures investments in the economy, increased by 1.3%.
There have been discussions out there which is beyond our mandate as STATSA. The discussions have been that we would like to see investments sitting at about 25-30%. And indeed, if we don't see investments going a little higher, it doesn't take us to where we would want to see.
Maluleke says exports have remained largely flat. Government is trying to diversify South Africa's export markets to protect the economy from global risks and trade tariffs. He adds that it's too early to say whether the current conflict in the Middle East will affect economic growth in the first half of 2026. But economists say several domestic bottlenecks still need to be fixed if the economy is to grow above 3% in the medium term.
It does remain some of the structural concerns. So electricity, not necessarily electricity supply, but electricity prices, which can increase year after year, make it very difficult for many businesses and households to afford that. If you look at other infrastructure issues like the logistics side, where yes, there's the rhetoric of reform from government, but we're still waiting to see private players operating in our ports and in our railways. If you look at the issue of crime, South Africa still has one of, if not the highest levels of crime in the world, and just what that does to business confidence, I mean, from an employee's safety point of view.
Statistics South Africa will in June present economic performance data for the first 3 months of this year. For Newsroom Africa on Channel 405, I'm Tokozo Khumalo in Pretoria.
Meanwhile, in Uganda, Uganda's health ministry has unveiled a revised charter in order to help boost service delivery.
The new commitment outlines standards of care that patients should expect while seeking services in government health facilities, as well as mechanisms for reporting complaints and providing feedback. Speaking during the launch, the Permanent Secretary Diana Atwine said the revised charter will help address persistent concerns about patient handling, delays in service delivery, and weak accountability within the health system. The
Minister of Finance, that has, in this coming financial year, they have given us some resources to hire more human resource. And that will reduce the gap. And once we reduce the gap, we'll be able to reduce on the waiting time. Because that is a quality indicator for us. So we cannot even talk about quality health services if someone comes and takes long in the queue, or comes and waits for hours without seeing a medical personnel.
Dr. Atwine noted that the ministry will also strengthen regulation and supervision of health facilities while ensuring that feedback from patients is acted upon promptly to improve the quality of care.
Okay, we understand. They've given us more resources to recruit. We know that the money is not enough. But even the ones that we have recruited and the ones that we have, we must ensure that the people we have and we have recruited and we have given salary and they have signed agreement that they take the terms, they agree to the terms that we have given them, must stay in facilities. We want to see people dismissed because we have bad apples in our midst.
Officials from the Ministry of Public Service who attended the meeting emphasized that the charter is part of a wider government efforts to promote professionalism, transparency, and citizen-centered service delivery across the public sector.
Next financial year, in the performance contracts of permanent secretaries and heads of government agencies, we are going to have an indicator in terms of measuring the score of client or citizen satisfaction. In other words, we shall be ensuring that what you have committed here, you are delivering.
Health authorities say the success of the revised charter will depend on both health workers adhering to the standards and patients actively using the feedback channels provided. Walter Mwesije, NTV.
Zambia's government has introduced an electronic livestock identification.
Government has reaffirmed its commitment to ensuring animal health and safety through electronic animal identification measures. Minister of Fisheries and Livestock Peter Kapala says his ministry remains committed to implementing measures that will help curb stock theft across the country. The minister said this during a tour of livestock infrastructure in Namala district.
Okay, it is like we are going to issue new passports or NRCs to all the animals in Zambia. So each animal will be monitored because that will be easier now to monitor diseases and when it was vaccinated, whether the child was vaccinated, the mother, the father, all that will now come to your desktop. Yeah. Another drought will come. I was talking about the cycle. Now it's so nice and green and people might forget to do, we should be ready. We should prepare for eventuality.
Sure.
And then by then it could be even be more pressure by, you know, because the cattle population will increase. And if there's a drought, we are going to lose a lot of cattle. So we don't want to go through that experience again.
Namala District Administration and the Security Wing have called on the Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock to consider marking goats for easy identification as part of efforts to curb animal theft.
As police DGOC, so far we are
we are trying to make sure that we reduce the stock theft. By using community engagement, we have created community groups like anti-stock theft teams in all the 16 wards. We say 16 wards, pardon. Then we engaged also the village headmen, the chiefs, and we have had the committee meetings every time. So the challenge is like during this rain season, we find that some areas are impassable because of the bad terrain.
Government is expected to roll out the digital animal identification system as part of efforts to improve livestock management, enhance disease control, and reduce stock theft in the country. I am Christabel Kanjele reporting in Namwala District, Southern Province.
Kenyan pipeline company shares rise after Nairobi Securities Exchange debate.
Now, shares in Kenya's pipeline company edged slightly higher in early trading this Tuesday. That's after debuting on the Nairobi Securities Exchange. The listing follows a successful IPO that raised around $823 million, making it one of the largest public share sales in Kenya's history. Now, the Kenyan government sold a 65% stake in the pipeline company. The IPO was oversubscribed, and that's despite earlier concerns over lower valuations from some banks, an extended offer period, and also local media reports of investor apathy. Now, President William Ruto, who rang the opening bell, said that proceeds will go to the new National Infrastructure Fund.
There is a deeper significance to today's listing. If you ask many Kenyans today, few can point to a specific national asset or project that has been built using proceeds from the sale of government stocks in companies such as KCB in 1988, Kenya Airways in 1996, KenGen in 2006, or Safaricom in 2008. Unlike previous privatization proceeds that were absorbed into the general government budget, the proceeds of this IPO, as well as future privatization, will provide capital to the National Infrastructure Fund, which I signed into law yesterday on Monday, February 9th, 2026.
Let's discuss that IPO further and, of course, those remarks. We're now joined by Churchill Ogutu, an economist at the ICE Group. Great to have you with us, as always, on the show, Churchill. Now, let's start off with KPC. We know trading in the share has now kicked off. They're currently trading at around nine shillings or 9.4 shillings per share. Just marginally higher than the IPO price, which, of course, was 9 shillings. What are your thoughts on the stock's performance so far? And given the previous reports of investor apathy, as we mentioned, what's your take on investor interest and, of course, the factors that are driving sentiment around the stock going forward?
Thanks for having me. Looking at the closing price of Kenya Pipeline, it closed at 9 shillings and 18 cents. So that's pretty much 2% higher than the offer price of 9 shillings that was given. It touched a high of 9 shillings and 50 cents, but that notwithstanding, these are still earlier days. As is typically said, one swallow does not make a summer, so we never can tell what the performance will look like over the next couple of trading sessions. But that said, looking at the IPO results announcements that were made last week, you're looking at retail investors, looking at the oil marketing companies, you're looking at the staff of Kenya Pipeline, collectively having 3% of all the shares of this company. So pretty much you can see that the free float of this three set of investors is quite low. Probably if you can add 15%, chipping it off the local institutional investors who are at 44%. So you're looking at a maximum of 20% free float that is there. So that speaks to that even going forward, the volumes that will be traded will be thin on this particular counter. But that notwithstanding, going forward, the sentiment will be impacted by a number of factors, boiling down to two things. One is that some of the investors who are not able to participate at the IPO level for one reason or another probably may look at some entry points going forward. So they opted not to participate in the IPO, but they can also look at the opportunities in the secondary market. The other thing is that as this company starts releasing financials and investors start looking at the prospects of the company, they'll also now be participating. So those are the drivers that will also dictate how the share performance will look like going forward.
Quite right. And I'll certainly like to get more into your thoughts on the shareholder structure. But first, I have to ask, something interesting did happen at the opening of KPC's IPO and trading of the stock. We saw President Ruto announce a new national infrastructure fund. He basically said that will be funded by IPOs such as Kenya Pipelines. And he also talked about using proceeds from the sale of stakes in state-owned companies like KPC to fund national development projects going forward. What are your thoughts on this sort of new financing model? Is it new for Kenya? And of course, its implications for Kenya's debt levels and infrastructural development going forward.
Yeah, for sure. At the heart of this administration's key election pledges was now set up of infrastructure fund. That was part of its manifesto. And so this is part of a fulfillment of an election agenda. So that's quite good. It's quite innovative, looking at ways of just trying to fund these big capital expenditure projects without going through the debt finance. So that's quite well in order. But that notwithstanding, if you look at debt accumulation, that speaks to fiscal discipline. So yes, you might have all these innovative ways, but at the heart of it, we also need to have fiscal discipline to ensure that there's no further debt pile up in as much as we have all these innovative plans going there. But now also speaking of the National Infrastructure Fund, I mean, it was the law was passed in a short period of time over the course of last week, which was quite surprising. But it's also in the run-up of just trying to get into the Kenya pipeline process from Kenya Pipeline IPO. But that notwithstanding, if you look at the specifics of the law, it was speaking about corporate governance issues. It was quite light in terms of how the investments will look like. So speaking about, it was light on the investment policy statement or how the sectors, various sectors will be funded from the National Infrastructure Fund. So hopefully, we hope to see that even going forward, yes, we have the fund, but also it has to blend well with how the investments will look like. We are in a country where we have, there's been quite opacity in terms of where the process of financing comes from. For instance, we have infrastructure funds, infrastructure bonds rather, but we never see infrastructural projects being funded by these particular bonds. You had even the president speaking about privatization proceeds in the past, but we haven't seen infrastructural projects being funded from that. So yes, it's good that we have an infrastructure fund. It's another thing that you can have a proper investment guideline so as to be able to, even as we see other investors coming on board, they also need to get some value for their monies.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's crude oil production lags OPEC target as prices increase or soar.
Million barrels per day production quota, but Nigeria has remained below that mark for months. Latest data from the Nigerian Upstream Petroleum Regulatory Commission shows output averaging 1.42 to 1.45 million barrels per day, still short of target. With crude prices now above $100 per barrel and rising due to the US-Israel onslaught on Iran, the missed opportunity stands to significantly cut potential revenues, adding pressure on budget financing and foreign exchange reserves.
That translates to about 40,000 to 60,000 shortfall per day. And if you consider that, it shows that not only are we losing, not being able to meet up with our OPEC quota, it's also showing that we are losing revenue and puts us in a very precarious position. And that's why Nigeria keeps borrowing.
Oil and gas remains central to Nigeria's public finances. Data from the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative shows The sector accounts for about 65% of government revenue and more than 85% of export earnings. That makes output performance critical to budget execution and foreign exchange stability.
It means a lot for our reserve, but most especially because of the forex. I mean, the bulk, close to 80-something percent of the forex we get actually from the oil and gas sector. So what that does is that when you have a less inflow from GDC, it affects your foreign oil reserve. I mean, it affects your foreign exchange reserve. And when that is low, it actually affects your currency.
Fiscal pressure could intensify if the trend continues, forcing difficult financing choices for the government.
We have a weak governance system. Even though we have the Petroleum Industry Act that took us almost two decades to have, there are some components of the Petroleum Industry Bill that we are not following up. It's more like having the law, but not following up with implementation.
It does, especially to increase borrowing. But what it does is that you already have projections. I mean, revenue projection that you use to support your annual budget. So when you don't have that projection, when you don't have money actually to support your budget, what it means is you tend to look at both internal and external borrowing to cushion the effect.
Every barrel Nigeria fails to produce widens the pressure on public finances. With the 2026 budget built on strong oil revenue assumptions, persistent output gaps could complicate spending plans and currency management in Africa's largest economy. Experts say operational setbacks from infrastructure limits to policy implementation must be addressed to close the gap and prevent further losses. Kelechi Amekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Global energy crisis weighs on Africa's top oil producers.
Thousands of miles away from Nigeria, but the direct impact has been felt here.
In the last 7 days, petrol prices have been adjusted upwards in Nigeria at least three times. Now, these adjustments are happening as global oil prices go up, and things might actually get worse in the coming days or weeks if this war continues to drag on. People in the country are now feeling the heat because the price of petrol has now gone up by at least 20%.
We're buying fuel 800 and something. Now fuel went to 960, 80. Today now, as of yesterday, today now fuel is 1,000. Look at them total 1,075 naira. I bought even in NFPC 1,081 naira yesterday evening. It's not proper. It's not good.
With the removal of petrol subsidy, Nigeria's domestic petrol price is now literally determined by the global price of crude. This is despite massive local refining by the privately owned Dangote Refinery, which has explained that even though it buys a portion of its crude locally and in the local currency, it still pays the Naira equivalent of the international price for the crude.
To shield Nigeria from, and I'll use the word foreign supply or external supply shocks, two things must happen. Crude oil production must increase. Once our crude oil production increases, more can go to local refineries. If more go to local refineries, then quote unquote, the shock is reduced in terms of supply sourcing.
Nigeria's inflation has been trending downward for some time now, causing the country's central bank to begin easing on interest rates. But the rising petrol price could now halt any further decline in inflation.
But when I'm looking at it from individuals, household firms, you know, the Nigerians on the street, how does it affect them? More money will have to come out from their pockets, you know, to meet up with their livelihood, to meet up with their daily demands. The cost of transportation will go up, cost of energy, cost of fuel, cost of food. They'll need to spend more money.
Indeed, while households feel the pinch at the pump, the government stands to gain from higher export revenues. Nigeria's budget benchmark was set significantly below the current crude prices. This means that every dollar above that benchmark translates into additional revenue flowing into the Federation account.
The caveat on that is that if that money is not spent judiciously, then it could be filtered away. The second thing is that once prices of petroleum products are going to shift, they are shifted based on a few things. Crude oil price, exchange rate. So if the continuous Let me say, if this war continues and crude oil prices continue to go up, what Federation account makes more money? It means that the three tiers of government also get more money too. Economy-wise, it now means that there's some positives in terms of foreign exchange because we're gaining so much more.
With a huge budget deficit and debts, additional revenue from crude would certainly make a lot of difference for government finances. But Nigeria's crude production currently hovers around 1.7 million barrels per day below its potential and below historic highs of over 2 million barrels daily. Analysts say the country may not reap adequately from the rise in global crude prices if it continues to produce below its capacity. One more worry for the government will be how to balance fiscal gains from more oil revenue with the domestic hardship the rising crude prices will bring about. DG Badimasi, CGTN, Lagos, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, disruptions caused by the Middle East war has a profound impact on shipping.
There's no doubt that the last 10 days have had a profound impact on our business, and I can break it down in three waves. The first one obviously started already on Saturday when we realized that this war had started, and it was about securing our colleagues, securing our assets, securing our facilities across the region. The second wave, of course, is with the closing of the Strait of Hormuz, was to figure out what is all the cargo in transit, what is going to happen to it. And we do about 40,000 containers in and out of the Gulf every week. So this is going to pile up very fast, and there is very limited areas where you can stage that much cargo. You get a lot of questions from customers about what's going to happen with their cargo. You have a lot of perishable goods, food stuff that absolutely needs to move or risks getting spoiled. So you go into a lot of the contingency for what needs to happen to here. And this led ultimately to us having to stop acceptance until the strait opens again. And then the third wave is the one that we're starting to deal with right now. And it is that for the first time in a very long time, at least in living memory, the Strait of Hormuz is closed. And it means that that we are seeing important dislocation in the energy markets. And we are obviously an energy intensive industry. We need a lot of oil to power our network. And we're starting to see important dislocation across the globe with facilities in the Middle East and in the Far East having some constraint looming about availability of fuel. Now we need to actually step in and take on a logistics role in bringing that fuel where it's going to be needed so that we don't take risks of having parts of our network coming to a halt.
And it's not just the Strait of Hormuz that's been disrupted where cargo vessels are no longer flowing. It's also the Red Sea route through the Suez Canal. Arguably, that's even more important. It's just a few weeks since you resumed shipping that way after a two-year absence. How disruptive is that to supply chains beyond the Middle East as well?
I mean, obviously, this going back and forth between the Red Sea and Suez is extremely disruptive for many customers because ships take longer time to arrive to port, meaning that suddenly for a few weeks you don't have a ship coming because it took a different route and it's longer. And so our customers don't get their weekly injection of goods in their distribution centers. So this can have some important impact on their ability to supply their different products to their different customers timely and without interruption. So this is something that we're taking very seriously.
But I think that's an impact you're already seeing though.
Now, of course, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis to stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place.